But the idea, did they impose their eating habits on you then?
Well, when they did the marketing, that's what they bought. See, when they were in control, that's what they bought. There was no other food but what they bought.
Now, you started to tell me how you happened to form the colony, that he had come up from the south?
Well, we had gone to several meetings there in 1919, and Dr. Hannan had escaped from the south, and then he said, so Helen thought that it was a great idea, and that living like that, and I thought living would be wonderful. Really had very idealistic ideas about it without knowing very much about it. No one could have known less. Helen, the Dietrichs and myself, in many ways had very much the same kind of a background. But the Hannans were altogether different. And it just didn't work at all. But we stayed friends.
You did, after
Oh, yeah, up. Oh, yes. After we broke up, we stayed friends.
Now, was your original plan to buy this place?
We were buying
you
it.
You were buying it.
Yes, we were buying it.
And did you, when you moved in, did the children live with their own parents?
Yes. Yes, they
so
lived
you,
with the,
you kept intact as family.
Yeah, yes.
How did you relate to the other children?
I liked them. I liked them well enough, you know. But they were kind of fighters in many ways, and it just happened that mine were not scrappers, really. Georgie was not a scrapper. And when Irene attacked her, I told her, why don't you pick up anything you want to and just let her have it? Because, see, when they come in, Minnie didn't say anything. Minnie didn't say, oh, you shouldn't do that. Then when Frances, my older daughter, had a fight with Marjorie. Marjorie had long, beautiful braids. And when they got, they had a big fight about something. So Frances grabbed hold of the braids and pulled and tweaked them. And Frances' hair was shorter, so Marjorie did, and they come out looking like two bloody gladiators. Really, it just didn't work. The funny thing is that we were much better friends when we separated.
But there was no conscious plan in the community to sit down and try and work out the problem.
No, it just began to be very disagreeable. We began to dislike being there so much. And I most of all just didn't like it at all.
At that time, your husband was still working in? At that time,
no, at that time he was already, no, at that time he was a salesman.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So he was not there all the time then?
No. No, he was gone quite a bit of the time.
But how were decisions made during that, when you did live there, during the time period you were there? How did the group, were there group decisions?
No, very seldom. Each one, when it was their turn to take care of it, then they did the, but it wasn't a group thing, which could have been a whole lot better. But, see, now when it was Dietrich, they did the marketing, they brought the food, and she was a very good cook. And then when it was Hannon's, they did it. And I told her they had raw oats and all that. And then when I did it, well, then I tried to do it when Joe was there so he could go ahead and do the shopping because I couldn't walk to the market. The markets were quite a long distance from us, about 6 or 7 or 8 blocks. So he had a car, so...
Now, did the children go to public school? Or did
yes, they went to public school. No, they popped to public school. But I tell you what we did have. Dr. Hannan was a marvelous teacher. And we learned more, for instance, he would have a kind of a, and it wasn't organized, a class for both the Dietrichs and myself. But I learned an awful lot from him. The one thing I never forgot, the thing that he called attention the words that are mostly mispronounced, like sumptuous or voluptuous, you know. Most people say sumptuous or something, and he called attention to some of those things. And then he said, in grammar, he called attention to some of the things that I never forgot, that were just really very, very good. Or if we'd be reading a book, he'd analyze it, or he'd proofread it. But he didn't work, dear.
He didn't work.
No, he didn't work.
Well, how did his family bring in money then?
How did he want?
How did he bring in money for his share of the?
Well, when it was your turn, then you bought everything.
Oh, you bought with your own money.
That's right.
I see. In other words, everyone didn't put money into a central pot.
No, that's right, no. Each one whose turn it was bought the things in for their money, and that's all.
I see. So it
wasn't well worked out at all. And there was for instance, Helen's sister and her brother, and then two other sisters came from Hungary, you know, and everything. It just wasn't organized well at all. It was gone in on the spur of a moment. Nothing was really thought out very well. And there was still a lot of prejudices.
Among yourselves, you mean?
Yes. Yes, there were. Particularly about food and about with the children. I remember my son got very, very angry at me and thought that I wasn't defending him when one of the Hannon children said that Bernard had talked about sex or something. Mm-hmm. Now, at that time, Bernard was about 9 years old, and I don't think he knew a thing about sex and everything. I said, because Dr. Hannon accused him, Bruno was very angry at me that I stood in such awe of Dr. Hannon, which wasn't true, that I didn't defend him because he knew this was a damned lie. Mm. And it was a lie. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of that. Some of that with the children particularly wasn't very pleasant.
Oh, I see.
The children were not very happy about it. They were so... And I know that when we moved out and came, you know, and I said, my God, by that time, you know, you could imagine, I had gone down to 98 pounds because it was just driving me crazy, all of it. And I said, doesn't it seem wonderful to be alone? We don't have to do anything because of anybody else, but just what we want to do.
Were there other groups of people who were setting up communities like this? Is this what inspired you?
No, we didn't. Only that we read about some. I read something about in New York where they had a kind of a socialist settlement and everything. But it was very different that they were founded really upon, not because they lived all together, but they were in a community together. And this was, we were living right together, very close together.
Two of the families were in one house and another family was in a separate house.
Yes, that's right.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't really well organized at all. And in spite of the fact that we, politically, we were all of one mind, in other respects, we were very far from it. Minnie Hannon had been a teacher also. She had been a teacher in a small country town, and she had some prejudices, the very small town prejudices about people and things, you know, even though she believed in socialism. But I don't think she ever really believed in it very strongly. She said, really, you know, I don't believe in... I think I prefer individualism. So I said, well, how does that conform to social? She says, I don't know how, but because it doesn't. So,
Barbara, did you call?
But, and her husband was a philanderer. Every,
how did you feel about that?
I was shocked. I was really shocked. But he did. Any new young woman that came in there and everything, and they did come out for listen to the lectures. He was an excellent lecturer. He taught the Communist Manifesto better than anyone I ever heard and everything. But I didn't find that they had very great scruples about many things that I would have thought were very important for a socialist.
Because many of the radicals in those days didn't believe in marriage or didn't believe in monogamous relationships, but you did.
Well, he was married, but I don't think he ever believed in monogamous marriage or anything. Cause he had, everywhere he went, he had a sweetheart or something.
And you saw that as being wrong.
Oh, yeah. Well, you see, at that time, we were not inured to that idea yet. And we still had some idea of the sanctity of the marriage law. And I remember that when my own girls were, and at that time, you know, when Dorothy was about 13 or 14, and Frances too, and the Young Communist League was a very promiscuous group. I didn't like them very much at all. So I said, look, girls, this scrap of paper is not that you're fighting. When you have a socialist society, there'll be nothing to I don't think it's a holy thing or a grand, but women still need it because there might be a child, and you have no right to impose upon a child something that that child may not accept. No.
Now, did most of the people in your group, that was something I wanted to get into more, with some of the other ideas of the socialists in your group, most of them then did believe in marriage and the sanctity
of marriage? Yes, they did. Most of them did. Although they didn't look down on anyone who didn't.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't look down on them, but neither did they advocate it.
So they were not involved in defense of so-called free love, like Emma Goldman and some of the...
No, they didn't like Emma Goldman. I never met anyone who really liked her.
But was it because of her personality or her ideas?
Her ideas and personality. See, I read her book. You read her book. And I've never read anything that showed so much ego and so much vanity as this woman. Don't you agree?
It's pretty egotistical.
She is not. She was. And then I had friends in San Francisco and Oakland who knew her very intimately, knew her.
Mm-hmm.
And they said she was, no one liked her. Personally, no one liked her. She was a brilliant speaker, and she was known as a brilliant person. But I thought when I read her book, I didn't think it was a very brilliant book. Did you?
Well, I feel it was just a very interesting life story.
Oh, yes, it was. You see, when she was deported to Russia, she was not happy there. She was very unhappy because she thought that being Emma Goldman, world famous, she ought to get certain privileges. And they saw no reason to give it to her. So she was very unhappy about it, you know.
Well,
she didn't like it there.
Were you opposed to her ideas about marriage and relationships with men and raising children?
No, I don't think I was ever really opposed to it because I did think that it seemed ridiculous to think that anyone, say, by the authority in me vested by the state of California or Colorado or anything else, I now put on. And I thought the only thing that justified a union was mutual love.
Mm-hmm.
So that didn't shock me at all because I did, I've always felt that.
But you did feel, because we started talking about it because you found, when you discovered that Dr. Hannon was a philanderer, this upset you.
Well, because I knew it upset his wife, too, you know. And he had children. And I think that the young woman he attracted was more because she was really a very fine lecturer and a very fine teacher, very fine teacher. But
it doesn't sound like the relationship between the different members of your colony were equal. It sounded like what you always referred to him as Dr. Hammond.
Yes, but, he was a doctor.
But did you ever call him by his first name?
Yes, Francis.
Oh, I mean, so...
Frank.
So you did... Was
yes.
it an equal relationship
yes.
between him?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. Yes, we never looked upon him as big any better or anything, mm-hmm. but he was a marvelous teacher, and he really did know much more about socialism and Marxism than most of those that I met. But in many ways, he did things, for instance, at that time, you see, don't forget this 1919 was very close to the Pomeroy. And that when he ordered certain literature, he ordered in the name of Will Dietrich. But Will Dietrich did the same thing about him.
This was the early night. This is before the Pomeroy, though.
Yeah.
The Pomeroy
started right after. The Pomeroy started shortly after we left the colony.
I see.
That was when Helen came to see me, then I already lived in North Denver, you know. And told me she had tried to go to sea. No. I think that Helen, of all of them, Helen approximated a real understanding of what socialism was more than any of the others. I don't think that Minnie was very in favor of it. And Dr. Hammond knew all about it. But I didn't think he lived like one like that. Because for one thing, you see, he was very, very nice to me. But I think he thought that I knew so many people in Denver, because I'd lived in Denver from the time I was 9 1/2 years old, and I knew many in the professions, too, that he wanted to found a school if I could get money from them.
Oh, I see.
And then I found out that's what he wanted me to get. I said, you know, Frank, I have never used my friends in order to get money from them. But this is for something, don't you believe in a school? Yes. Well, don't you believe in doing what you can to help a school? I said, but you see, if they know what it is, that I should ask them to give it to me and then I give it to you, and if I had, it would have been disastrous because he lost everything. Mm-hmm.
What kind of school was it that he...
The School of Social Science. He was a great believer in science, and he was a marvelous teacher.
And was it to be a Marxist school?
No. Well, Marxism would be part of it, but it would not be just based on Marxism, but as part of the science program it would be, and everything. And he did it. He was an excellent teacher.
And was the idea that this school be tied to your colony or separate?
No, the separate. The separate could have nothing to do with it.
Well, Barbara, when you decided to leave the colony, did each family decide? How was the decision made that you were going to break it up?
I think I did it. I said, look, there's no reason for me to stay. My children are very unhappy. And their interest comes before mine. After all, I do owe them something. I've gotten to work. And they're very unhappy here. And I'm not contributing anything in any way to this because I don't like cooking and I don't want to feel that I have to cook once and three times either. Because all of you are so different in what you like and I don't know how to manage that. So we want to get out.
And then everyone decided to?
And then, see, we were the first ones to go out. Then, in a little while, the differences between the Dietrichs and the Hannons became so pronounced, and ill feeling began to develop, too, you know, kind of a discord, that It had a breakup. So then the Hammonds left.
Oh, I see.
But so see, although the Hammonds knew the most, the Hammonds also had the least. And that made a difference because you had to have a certain amount. So they never paid back in any way what they had gotten. They couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So no one ever held it against them.
Well, and then the place was sold?
No, the Dietrichs kept the place.
I see.
They kept it for many, many years.
And they lived there?
Yes, they lived there and they rented out one of the people that are now, we call him Shepsel. He and Esther moved into the place where the Hammonds used to live in that thing there. Now, they had been anarchists, and they became a communist afterward. And they paid a small rent for the place, you know, and everything.
Now, and did you get your money back out when you left or not?
Most of it. I didn't ever get all of it, but most of it. So you put in $500, and I think we got $400 back.
And how long did this whole arrangement, how long did you stay there?
I really don't think that we stayed more than a year. It really didn't work out well either. See, if we had known more of one another, now, see, remember that the Dietrichs had no children at all, but her sister and brother and then the other sisters that came were there, and the other sisters that came from Hungary were not socialists, but they were nice people, very nice people.
So you had a lot of visitors coming in?
Oh, yes.
Too.
Yes, we had a lot of visitors coming all the time.
Do you think that this also disrupted it, or did it?
I don't think, no, I don't think it had anything to do with the disruption at all, because those who came were socialists,
mm-hmm.
and who were anxious to know more and everything and learn. So they were not a disruptive element at all.
So in other words, this...
But
this
see, the only one that bothered me is that some of my friends belonged... For instance, we had a friend, he was a famous lawyer in Colorado, and his wife, and, you know, they were very, very intimate friends of mine, and I was trying to make socialists of them, but they came and their sphere was very different, and that's the ones that that Frank wanted me to get money from. Well, now, they would have given any amount for me, but for me to get it for me and then turn it over to him, I couldn't do that. I've never liked asking people for money anyway. It's one of the things I've hated.
So in other words, though, it was called the Colony?
We called it the Colony.
So it was known then in socialist circles as a communal experiment? All these people who would come visit?
Did you really say it was an experiment and it had so little relation to anything else?
Well, you were hoping it would be.
I was hoping it would be, yes. But you see, I was the kind of I had an idealized conception of what it would be. Really knew very little of the practical aspects of it. And the one who really benefited the most from it, financially and was the Hammonds. Because here they had a hard time in... With $100, that's all they had, meeting their bills, you know, and here after all. But I felt in a way, when Frank once mentioned that it's so, I said, well, Frank, I feel you don't measure everything in terms of money. What you are giving of your knowledge, I think, more than compensates for the other. He says, well, you feel that way. I know you really feel that way about it, but I don't think the others do. They think they know as much as I do, which they didn't.
No, but it was known that in the Denver area, I mean, people would come out to visit you as a socialist colony then.
Well, they knew socialists were living there.
I see.
I don't know if they really called it a socialist colony, but they thought... They probably did think we were trying an experiment to see how it would work. Well, it didn't.
Because that was the time when there were a lot of colonies like that in different parts, like the home colony
that's
and
right,
the
that's
colony.
That's right, that's right. Well, Well, the Lama colony was the most prominent and everything. That was really a very sad thing, because I knew so many people that I knew, and I still know people who live there, you know. Nellie Miller, the Wexlers. I knew quite a few people who lived there. They said that you'd be surprised to know how many came out there who were nothing but bums, really didn't want to do anything, and really caused a lot of friction. But didn't contribute very much. Now, that doesn't mean all of them, because some of them were really, really tried to, and tried to maintain it. I know that Job Harriman did everything he could to make it work. He was really a wonderful guy. A wonderful guy.
Now, how did your husband feel about this community? Did he like the idea when you decided to go there?
Who?
Joe.
No, Joe just went along. He didn't like it. He didn't think anything of it. He just went along. He was a pleasant person who always got along with everybody. He very seldom disliked people. And he seldom, I don't believe I ever heard him quarrel with anybody. And you know what he used to do when we had visitors and they stayed too long? He loved music with a passion that I can't even describe to you. He loved it, just it was something over and above everything. And he'd have a great many of the songs and everything. So if people stayed too late, he had to get up very early. He'd play Home Sweet Home. And then they'd say, is that an invitation to go? He said, well, I have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. So I would appreciate if you'd say goodnight.